Welcome to today's Job Seeker broadcast, and our topic is, are you changing careers? Here are three steps. And you know, according to almost every survey, more than 50% of the workforce report that they don't like their jobs. So how does one begin thinking about something better? A new job, which makes Mondays a happy day. Well, the solution to changing your career is much easier than you may think. And to help me discuss this topic, I'm joined by a special guest co-host, Peter DePauli, out of Sherwood, Oregon. Peter is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. And you can see Peter's picture and bio. Just click Preferred Counselors on our toolbar. Hello there, Peter. Peter will be joining us momentarily. He has been counseling individuals in career advancement and job search since 1980, and that's over 34 years. He lives in Sherwood, Oregon, and has acquired two master's degrees, the most recent a master's in counseling. In addition to coaching individuals with their career, resume, and job hunt, he has been an outplacement and assessment consultant to large and small business firms, government agencies, and nonprofit organizations. Peter is also an instructor for many local colleges and universities teaching career advancement for both undergraduate and graduate students. For the first 30 minutes of our show, Peter and I will talk about our topic, changing careers, how to do it in three steps, and then we'll take a short break and begin to answer your job hunting questions, which we receive for the broadcast. Okay, Peter, let's talk about the three steps to finding a new career.
Okay, and, John, I'm with you. Here I am.
Oh, you bet. You know, as we realize the truth of these employment surveys, and, you know, we read these about once a year, depending on what publication we're reading, what news outlet we're reading, that at least for 50%, sometimes the percentage goes up to 65, 70%, people report they don't like their jobs. So the immediate question that's begging to be asked is, how did these employed individuals end up in a undesirable job? What happened? Why don't you take a stab at that?
Well, John, I could probably even share from my own life. You know, people get into either a culture or their household and what mom and dad did, or Uncle Otto was an engineer, your father was an engineer, and you're supposed to be an engineer. I've heard it all the time from students that are in college. Why are you here? I don't know. I saw the movie Serpico, if you can remember, back in the 70s, and I went for a four-year degree in police science. That's how I started.
Yeah.
And so somebody gets a passion or a value system that's really, really important to them, like helping people, saving people, going against the bad guy, whatever it is, and then they end up going to school and getting an identity formed around that based on their education.
Well, and now that you mentioned that, going to school, I know a high school senior who has decided he wants to be a police officer. And I've known this this young man ever since he was 5 years old. And the last thing in the world I would ever imagine that he would be good at doing would be police work. It's just not there.
Right.
Now, the irony of the whole thing is the parents have been going along with it, and they're so delighted he's going on to college. He's choosing a college that trains police officers. It's just not there. So we can say, and I am supporting this from the chorus of other career guidance counselors that I've assisted, trained, and been in communication with, that we all agree people make choices about their career with faulty information, and a lot of times it's because a series of little events, finally you come up to the point where you're headed down this road, and, well, I might as well finish it up, and you started it way back. And very, very few people stop, get off the train of life, and make a honest effort to make a wise decision. That's the exception to the rule. And so no wonder people get in a messy situation. So what this show about, what today's show is about, is correcting that. But at least we ought to touch on the fact that it is true. We make poor choices about our career direction. Now, you already alluded to the why that poor choice, and you stated, well, they go with their passion. Why don't you unpack that a little bit?
Well, they might have a passion for doing something that's a high-value system, i.e., again, helping people. A lot of people that I meet with that are studying, let's say, counseling, they want to help people, but do they have counseling ability? Same thing with I want to make a difference, or I want to own my own business or whatever. Do they have the capacities to do that? Otherwise, what happens is the passion burns out as you get older if it's not leaning on something that's a natural thing for you and you're putting in twice as much time and twice as much effort just to keep your head above the water. I think what we've done, John, for all these years is, you know, somebody's climbed the ladder of success and they found that they're on the wrong building.
Yeah. And you know, like you said, you saw a movie, someone else might have been to a concert and listened to a trumpet player, someone else may have been in a building that was burning and a fireman saved their life, and so we get this inspiration. The irony is that our educational systems feed that inspiration. You want to be a fireman? You come to our program. You want to be a lawyer? You come to our program. You want to be a pastor? You come to our program,
right,
and we'll give you all the courses and have a good life.
Mm-hmm.
And the point of all this is we are hardwired with innate talent, and if that innate talent is not a big part of the job, this person's headed for burnout. It's the ladder leading against the wrong building. Okay,
right.
Well, we've established that fact of that many people are unhappy with their work, and that they and how they got into this mess. And I know that in doing seminars, this is a whole 30-minute discussion in a seminar, how with diagrams and everything, how people get into the wrong career. But let's turn the corner and start talking about some positive things. And you've already alluded to something in a more negative way. Let's make it positive. It is true that we are motivated by passion. We can use other words such as a deep-seated value. I have a value for justice. And when somebody's justice is compromised, when something unfair happens, boy, that gets me really riled up, and I want to go there and help that individual. So there's a value for justice. And some of us want to achieve a certain financial statement that I want to make X amount of dollars by the time I'm 45. Other individuals are motivated by, I want to work for a big company and ultimately be an executive. Whatever those passion statements are that come from our interests and values, they are huge in motivating us to go in a certain direction. And so step one of changing career is we need to identify the passion, and here's the link now. Your passion needs to identify a type of organization that satisfies that passion. So if you have a passion to be in the great outdoors, what kind of employer is going to employ you so you can be in the great outdoors. Well, park ranger and state park systems would certainly be a good one. A construction company would be another good one. A organization that pays you to be a transport driver would be another one. And it goes on and on and on from there. But the point is, we're saying we want to play with your passion so that it allows you to be a driver towards something that you know excites you, that you know really gets you fired up, and that should identify the type of organization. Now, Peter, I've been talking too much. Let's talk about this a little bit.
Well, John, I have somebody that is in class that I'm teaching, and he has, well, he's already had four careers, and, you know, the average is about six in your lifetime, so he's getting a master's degree, and he's like, this, you know, this is not a thing that I need to repeat here, and yet he is had his own construction firm. He's loved the outdoors. He's been a facilities maintenance person, and you know, and looking at his profile and stuff, I asked him. I said, "What do you think about like a camp or a retreat center? Because you could use all of the different talents that you have." And looking at that, and John, you know what makes me excited is the networking and stuff, and I know that that's, you know, part of, you know, looking for a job, but the bottom line is he actually went and interviewed someone in the area who is a director of a camp and campground and retreat center, and do you know, just from that, he's been invited to the regional conference in Idaho by this director who happens to be what? The president of the regional, you know, area director. And so he's going to be in there and rubbing shoulders with people who are directly in the campground and you know, retreat center with a master's degree. And he's really excited about the possibility of being a director for a camp.
Being connected there. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, now we want to be very careful now in step one. And saying that your passion, and your passion is comprised of things that interest you and things that are deep-seated values, convictions that you have about the world, about what you want to do with your life, about what makes a difference. Well, we'll pick this up after the break.
Okay.
Okay, John, we have a short 2-minute break. Today we've been talking about job search tips, but you do a lot more for men and women who are struggling with mid-career issues.
That's right, Evan. We do. We help men and women find that career sweet spot which can give their life meaning and purpose.
Do you really think that anyone, regardless of education, present job, or a reentry homemaker with no current marketplace skills, can really believe that there is something special out there?
Yes, Evan, I believe they can find a fulfilling career and get hired to do it.
You know, John, as I've talked with you about career advancement, I've been thinking about all those thousands of mid-career adults who go back to school to earn a college degree or even an advanced graduate degree, and yet...
Well, yeah, Evan, and yet they don't get hired in their field after they finish the degree, right?
Right. Yeah, it seems so sad.
Well, there is a brighter picture that advanced education can really pay off if only the student took the time to find his or her sweet spot and then choose a degree which complements the career choice.
Boy, that really makes sense. Can we talk more about this during the next break?
Certainly.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority for discussion. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's return to our broadcast and pick up where we left off.
And we're back to our broadcast today talking about changing careers. It only takes three steps. And to help me with this important discussion is Counselor Peter DePauli from Sherwood, Oregon. Peter is one of our 12 handpicked preferred counselors who is featured on our website. You just tuned in. You can see Peter's picture and bio. Just click on our toolbar, Preferred Counselor. Peter, let's get back to our discussion. We were just finishing up with step one of how to change careers, and that is we've got to identify our passions and link our passion to types of organizations. And maybe an example would help here. If somebody loves athletics, maybe it's baseball, basketball, football, we'll call that a passion, it's reasonable to assume that if their job somehow includes recreation or athletics, then this will be a more positive place of work. Now, what might those places be? Well, a store that sells athletic equipment, an organization that prints and sells jerseys and sports clothing items, a company that sells different kinds of athletic shoes, a city office that manages parks and recreation for people in the park system, and so on and so on. But the key here is that we haven't talked about a job title yet. We just talked about the type of organization. Any further comments on this, Peter, before we go to step two?
Well, I was just thinking that's why you just have to stay with the organization because, you know, the actually defining the job is more the innate ability. So you can stay with, you know, another one I would say was like a university, you know, like in the athletic area, is also a overall type of organization that you could work for with the with that background too.
Yes, absolutely, yes. Well, and there are many. And what we have found is if a person goes to a list, and I go back to the old days where we had the Yellow Page Index,
mm-hmm.
and you go through that. I used to have clients do that long, long ago before the Internet, and they go through all these categories of types of organizations, and they can accurately pick, yeah, I like that one, this looks interesting, and so on. But they're only picking the type of organization. Now, when we go to step two, we're in a whole different ballgame because step two is going to lead us to the job title. And then in step three, we match the job title with the preferred type of organization.
Right.
So back to step two. Whatever someone's current occupation appears to be, whether they're that fireman or lawyer or office administrator, express delivery driver, whatever it happens to be, that job has occupational skills. Now, the big question mark is somebody using their innate hard wiring in their current occupation, and if so, we want to save those hardwiring traits and use them in the next career? Or is somebody doing a job that's a right-handed job, but they're left-handed?
Mm-hmm.
They don't fit the job at all, and they're just burning out. Well, in that case, the individual has to find his or her innate hardwired traits. Ever since they were a little boy or a little girl, they've had these traits, and those traits have grown with them all through middle school, high school, and in their early employment. Well, there has to be that discernment of these traits. And I like to say the number five is a good number. A person needs to be able to identify five of their hardcore innate traits. I'm really good at, it comes natural to me, traits. And those five traits should define the core of this new job that they're talking about. Well, Peter, tell me where I'm off the track here.
No, you're not off track, John. It's just the five traits that people are going to be scrambling in their head, like, well, you know, what does that mean? Am I good at, overseeing people? Am I good at sales? Am I good at making decisions under emergencies? Am I good at teaching people a concept or subject matter? It just depends on what those are. And I know from our backgrounds and stuff, we've looked at there's the how do you communicate and how you relate with people and how you do functions and tasks with people. So that may help to give a little bit of a template to, mm-hmm. to look at those five. So
yeah, and certainly there are tests and exercises that an individual can take to identify these hardwired traits. But the point is, a person needs to understand, to unravel the mystery of this, that there's a big difference between their passion and their hardwiring.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, eventually the two intersect, but they intersect in a very strategic way. It is not true that a person is going to be passionate about their hardwiring, especially if they don't enjoy their work, if their work does not give them a sense of fulfillment and satisfaction. What a lot of times people will do is say, well, I am totally stressed out with teaching as a job. I don't want to see another fourth grader again. I remember one client who was a vice president, who was an executive in marketing. I don't ever want to see another marketing strategy or plan again in my whole life. And they throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Right.
Well, there are going to be some plums, some real gemstones there of what a person has done that need to be defined and pulled out of that situation and used in a different work setting,
mm-hmm.
in a different job title.
Right.
And so that's what we're talking about. We're making a distinction between I have a passion, I really value, and those qualities and characteristics define the ideal organization that you work for,
mm-hmm.
and then we have the job. And here's the irony of the whole thing. A very popular company up in the Northwest is Nike. This is our single Fortune 500 company in the state of Oregon.
Right.
Everybody wants to work for Nike. They get so many unsolicited applications and resumes that they have no trouble finding the top-tier talent. And we know that Nike is all about athletic shoes, athletic garments, and it goes on and on from there. Now, not everyone that works for Nike has an athletic-related job. You go talk to the IT person, you talk to the customer service person, you talk to the accounting person, you find that none of those even touch anything to do with athletics, and yet they work for an athletic company. And so that's why it's so essential to separate the job duties you do from the organization that you work for. When you meet someone that works for Nike, there is a culture there, and it's very robust, and it's very athletic-oriented. It doesn't matter what the job is. So you're getting some vicarious athletic excitement and euphoria by just hanging around.
Mm-hmm.
But only a handful of individuals are actually making personal contact with athletes and athletic goods. And that's why we have to kind of separate these two. Okay, ready to go to step three?
Okay.
Let's do it. So step three is matching the job title with the organization. And that that process is something that, of course, you can take tests and exercises to do this. But as we're talking about it in the broadcast, we want to take that ideal organization and we want to identify the job title in that organization that uses your five top hardwired strengths. Peter, give us sort of a, how does one do this?
Well, a lot of times, John, it's the other people in your life that notice it, because when you do something, you go, that's no big deal, but it's probably because it's a talent and somebody else recognizes it in you before you do. So I think getting some feedback from some friends, doing an assessment and looking at what those talents are, because I think in our society what happens is you either get, you're going to do this because, you know, it's a generational thing of doctor, 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 or you can become anything you want to become, and that's just not true. If I tried to be a CPA, I would just probably destroy a bookkeeping firm because I do not have numbers ability, and I've always known that, always struggled with math in school. So you have to define the things that are really strong for you, and like you've always said, 60% of the job should be focused on using those talents and abilities.
Yeah,
and to excel at those.
Okay, so in terms of taking all this theory and applying it to something real,
mm-hmm.
as I'm following sort of the trail you're providing here, we're saying to the individual, let's identify five potential employers where what that organization stands for, the product or service that they provide, really appeals to you.
Mm-hmm.
And now that you're thinking about that organization, you need to identify in that organization one, two, no more than three jobs where your hardwiring is the core of the job. And you said 60% of the time doing the job matches your hard wiring.
Right.
So if somebody's going to do a do-it-yourself, that's how to do it. We start with the organization that really is appeals to you,
mm-hmm.
and then from there, we identify a max of three jobs. Let's pick this up after the break, Peter.
Okay.
We're taking a short 2-minute break to ask John Bradley some questions about pursuing an advanced degree as a strategic step to a better job. John, in our last break, you suggested that more education can be a curse as well as a blessing.
That's right, Evan. If a person chooses more education to acquire skills they don't have...
You mean innate skills they don't have.
Right. Someone who thinks they can gain hardwiring skills through education, well, I'm sad to say that for this person, there will be limited career success.
Hmm. So give us the positive side of the coin.
Well, the good side is that by choosing wisely, that is, the right career, an advanced degree can work wonders and even help the person get hired with the employer of their choice.
Well, that sounds encouraging, and I know you have more on this subject, like, how does one know if a new career is really right for them and worth all that additional education?
That's right, Evan. We can discuss that on our next break, how to know for sure.
Thanks, John. If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during this will be given John's priority for discussion. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's go back to our broadcast.
And we're back to our Job Seeker broadcast talking about the three steps to changing your career direction. And joining me in this enlightening discussion is counselor and veteran career counselor Peter DePauli from Sherwood, Oregon. Peter is one of our 12 preferred counselors picked out of over 600 that we've trained and mentored over the years. And in case you just tuned in, you can see Peter's picture and bio on our website. Peter, we're talking about the third and last step that a person needs to take to change their career. We're trying to conceptualize this so a person can get it. Now, obviously, there are many, many details that we don't have the time to cover, but we're trying to convey this is doable. This is not rocket science. And sometimes the first step to making change is understanding and developing a conviction. I'm going to do this. But here's the final piece. So somebody does their homework and they identify a type of company, a type of nonprofit that they aspire to, meets their values and interests, and then they identify a job title. And one of my favorites is an international relief organization, disaster relief organization, and the job title is medical equipment manager, the person that's managing the acquisition and storage of all the medical supplies and equipment. Okay, so there it is. And let's just pretend that the person currently is a salesperson for a copy machine company. So, I chose that on purpose so there's absolutely no correlation between one and the other. How does this person know that they really are suited for that? I mean, they've just sort of hypothetically thought about this. What's that validation step that lets them know they're on the right track and gives them that extra oomph to make that change?
Well, I would tell that person to maybe do some volunteer, job shadow, field experience so that they can see hands-on if this is exactly what they want to do. Because if it calls for being able to diagnose electrical, mechanical types of things, or is it more the long-range planning that they have to plan the equipment for a disaster relief excursion, or if it's more, getting the types of equipment to the on the ground as fast as they can. You know, all those take different talents, and so they really need to see which one of those would suit them best.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is one thing we know, and that is when two different people have the same talent, there is some special chemistry that, mm-hmm. that happens. It just happens. Yeah. And so as you're saying, it is absolutely essential that the final proof of the pudding is you got to meet the person that's doing the job.
Right.
Words like job shadowing, field experience, internship, but even something as simple as go meet that person and spend 30 minutes finding out what the person does. Don't talk to them on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Don't take them out for a coffee. Go to their place of work and absorb the ambiance, the place of work, and all the activity going on there, and learn about the actual job duties. And there should be some really strong vibes that occur, because some employer someday is going to say, well, what's a salesperson selling copy machines doing talking to a disaster relief organization? Help me connect the dots here. You better have a good answer for that.
Right, right. You have
and
to bridge
the answer
that.
Is I checked this out.
Right, right.
Yeah. Okay, well, Peter, any parting comments before we turn to talk about these job seeker questions that we've received?
I think it's real important, and, you know, we've talked about this over the years, is even more so as you get older, the importance of nailing this down, because you have that youthful zeal early on, but around 30, 35, you just can't put out the learned skills as much as you can with the natural ability. The natural ability almost grows bigger and stronger as you get older. And so that's why a lot of people hit the wall at 30, 35. And I do a lot of teaching in the adult learning programs at various universities, and that's who's in those programs. They have hit the wall. They are going back to get retooled education-wise. But, again, I bring up, are you in the right curriculum in your adult learning? That's a key thing, and they're trying to do that early on so that you get a good blueprint before you go into the program, and making sure that I don't want to hit the wall again at, you know, 50, 55. So.
Well, and that's the scare factor, is if you're frustrated with your current job and you know you have to make a change, how do you know the change is truly going to last a lifetime?
Right.
What if you 5 years down the road realize, oops, I got to make change number three now? And it's that confirmation, that validation of meeting the person that has the job, and you could even go beyond that, the job shadowing, the internship, the field experience, to absolutely make sure. We are not recommending that you go talk to some professor about that career unless you want a job as a professor. Educational institutions are notorious for getting you all excited about a new career, but in the final analysis, not really helping you diagnose and evaluate and assess how that new career really fits you and your future. Well, all that being said, Peter, let's jump into the job seeker questions. Have you got one for us?
Yeah, let's try this one because it kind of goes along with what we're talking about. Fred in Las Vegas, I was just laid off of a large electrical contract job. There are no other electrician jobs here. Things are very slow. Should I look for a new line of work?
Huh. Well, if Fred was working as an electrician, that's a five-year apprenticeship. That's a huge investment in education. And Fred is concerned. He's not complaining about the doing of the work. He's complaining the fact that opportunities are not as available.
Right.
So I would say the very first thing is Fred needs to identify at least three electricians working in more stable situations where there isn't a period of the construction and then the construction is over and now you're without a job. But maybe a maintenance electrician or electrical shop that is established and they're doing electrical repair for industrial or commercial or even residential. And he needs to understand those different types of electrical work to see if that's a fit. And only after he has done that should he consider jumping ship and going do something else. Now, if Fred was complaining that he's burned out, frustrated, he barely is able to get up in the morning on Monday to go to work, then that would be a whole different approach. But he's not saying that. So that's my, just quickly off the top of my head, my advice to Fred. What are your thoughts, Peter?
Well, I also was thinking, you know, there's other organization clusters down there, and so what about being like a facilities manager? You got hotels down there, you've got universities, you've got, you know, all kinds of different things that he could use his electrical expertise at, and yet maybe not just be so narrow in that, maybe do a whole lot of different things in a building or in some kind of facilities.
Right. Yeah, a plant.
Right.
Or an exhibit, a large convention center, a hospital, a warehouse.
Right. Right.
Many, many, many large organizations out there that have a ton of electrical issues. Generally, I believe the title for that is maintenance electrician or plant electrician. And I know that in the electrical field, there's a pecking order of how these individuals are rated, no different than any other occupation. But I would say that Fred should redeem all the years that he's put into his electrical work before he decides to make a total change and move off into something else. And I do know that electricians are at the top of the totem pole as far as the trades. They're paid the best, and they're paid very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be another reason for him to strongly stay within that area. Another possibility, I just thought of this, and that would be he might go back to one of his apprenticeship instructors and ask that instructor for some suggestions and some possible contacts to network, because these graduates that have gone through the apprenticeship program, they've ended up employed in other places, and that instructor is going to know who they are and where they went.
Right.
Well, how about another job seeker question?
Well, here's an actual one that wants to change. So this is Sherry in California. I have been a hairdresser for 10 years and do not want to continue in that work. I'm a single mom with two young children. What are my options?
Whoa. Well, my hat's off to Sherry.
Absolutely.
Just having a job with all that is a part of that and putting in your 40 hours is enough of a grinder. But then you add to that a single mom with two children, man. So I'll bet that Sherry is really experiencing a lot of stress. I don't know. This is a hard one. Most likely, Sherry does not have any spare time, Peter, to do some night school or degree completion here, because all her time is contained just spare time with her family. Let's pick this up after the break.
Okay.
We're taking a short 2-minute break at the final quarter of our show to ask John Bradley about the wisdom of pursuing an advanced degree as a strategic step to a better job. John, in our last break, you left us hanging with the statement that we could know the right career for sure, for sure. Those were your very words, that we could know if a future career direction is right and worth any investment of more education.
Right, Evan. Those were my very words. You can know the right career for sure, for sure.
Okay, so how does one know?
Well, let's think about house hunting. You are meeting with a realtor and asking that person to help you find the ideal home that has, say, 3 bedrooms, a good neighborhood, and so on. The realtor does a computer search and finds 5 houses for sale which fit your preferences.
Okay, I'm with you so far.
Well, here you have the pictures, and on the computer you can take a virtual tour of each house. Are you ready to make a decision to buy that one?
Well, no, I'm not ready. Virtual reality is good for a start, but I need something more tangible. I mean, I want to see the house. I want to walk in the rooms, look at the backyard.
You mean you want to walk through the house before you buy it, right?
Right.
Well, that is the same approach to selecting your ideal career. You want to meet the person who has your job.
You mean meet face-to-face?
Yes, face-to-face at the job site, not over coffee. To make a confident decision, you need to see, feel, touch, taste, hear, smell, talk, and finally dream. Then you will know for sure, for sure.
So where are you going to find that person? I don't know all the people employed out there in 50 states.
Well, Evan, because this step of career validation is so important, our mid-career advancement services provide that link for our clients to find that person in their city who represents each recommended career.
So the hopeful career seeker can know for sure, for sure.
Yes, he and she can know for sure, for sure.
Well, John, this has been a most interesting journey.
Thanks, Evan.
I want to encourage any of you who are feeling the stress of a dead-end job to go to our website, www.idacgroup.com, and make contact with one of our preferred counselors. Each of these seasoned men and women are professionals at helping you discover your wiring. You will see the reference, Preferred Counselors, at the top of our toolbar. John, we still have the last quarter of your show. Let's return.
Let's do it.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. And now, John, let's return to the final quarter of our show.
We are here talking about changing careers and answering questions from job seekers that have contacted us. And to join me in this discussion is Counselor Peter DePauli out of Sherwood, Oregon. Peter is one of our top 12 preferred counselors that we have selected from over 600 that have been part of our system over all these years. You can see Peter's picture and bio. Just click Preferred Counselors on our toolbar. Peter, we were just about to answer this job seeker question from Sherry in California, the hairdresser. And, you know, any time we're answering these questions, we want to be as realistic and not just pie in the sky. So we have to acknowledge that Sherry is in a stressor situation where she's a single mom with two kids. And just saying, well, you need to go back, do a degree completion program or get another degree of some kind or education, I don't know that she has that kind of spare time. I'm sensing from her comment that the work of hairdresser is not to her liking. For some reason, it is not appealing to her. Now, if I were to pick up on one thing, and they call the person that cuts my hair a barber, at least that's the term that I've used, there is something that comes with that job description, and that is a huge amount of customer interaction. There's a little bit of sales in there and engaging in conversation and making this hair cutting process, hairstyling process, a positive experience. And I would just say to Sherry that she should camp on that, the sales, the customer service, and look for a job that gives her a lot of people contact where she can make being with her a pleasant experience. This could be a concierge at a hotel. This could be the receptionist for a resort. Any retail store where the customer comes in and you smile and you say, can I help you? A hostess at a restaurant, any of those, in that, we've covered a few thousand jobs right there. What are your thoughts on this, Peter?
Well, John, I kind of looking at this and saying, Sherry's got a captive audience, and not necessarily to say, hey, I don't like what I'm doing, I want another job, but because of her clientele is so broad, she could just have a conversational communication with people and just say, oh, I see that, I've known you for years and you're doing this. How do you like it? What do you like about it? What kinds of things do you find satisfying and and such like that. And so she can maybe narrow it down a little more, and the person doesn't even know that she's really looking. Just kind of do a conversational interview with people
on
the chair.
Yeah, that's an excellent idea. and she already has the relationship, so if the customer comes up with something intriguing, that customer could end up becoming a referral for her.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But, you know, I would say, though, as far as the if income was an issue for Sherry, a retail sales position, the customer is coming to her where she gets a commission on top of a guaranteed minimum, to me, that would be the optimum. And every department store has a section there where they have cosmetics, they have perfumes, they have things that people buy that have to do with their appearance, person and grooming and so on. That would be a natural fit if greeting the public is a positive thing for Sherry.
Right.
Okay, let's try another one.
Well, here's David in Little Rock, Arkansas, and I thought this was interesting. I teach history online and would like to advance to a full-time campus faculty position. How can I break into a very tight circle? Now, I can maybe say something to that because of teaching in the universities right now. The number one area that all these schools are going for is online education. They are spending for consultants to get this up online, where and then especially for these basic classes, they are videotaping the professors that are really good in their subject matter so that they can have this over and over and over again. So I think that if he was to deepen that and, you know, do some of this online, but then, you know, you can go to faculty meetings. We have adult degree program meetings once every quarter, start, you know, networking and such like that, and volunteer to do more of these things because you want your name and your face to be part of this bulging online education that's happening right now.
Yes. Well, I, both you and I have had a considerable amount of experience with individuals who want to get into higher education as as professors, as faculty. And if there's one occupation that is a good old boy, good old gal system, it's certainly teaching at a college or university. It's a very, very tight-knit group. And the way you get in, I would say David's already got his toe in the water in the fact that he is employed by a campus. And so I don't know. Hopefully David's already thought about this and, you know, has five good reasons why not. But what David needs to do is find a department that allows for teaching one or two classes as adjunct faculty.
Right.
And there are different kinds of departments represented by a college university. And the name of the game is teaching experience on that campus. That's the name of the game. That's how you get in.
Yes.
Now, he doesn't have classroom teaching experience by doing online, but he has a relationship, and that, I mean, he needs to be commended that he's got this relationship going.
Right.
I would say there probably is a stereotype that's negative regarding online faculty versus classroom faculty. So he needs to demonstrate that he can do the classroom by doing some kind of adjunct. Did I cover that, or Peter, you are way more experienced in this than I am.
Yeah, that's good because the online sometimes doesn't have a live audience, but they can call in or they can Skype, and so he's interacting with the class anyways. But you're right, the next thing is to adjunct and actually go on-site and teach these different classes and such. But like I said, networking with the people that have the hiring authority, and that helps to get your name in there. And then when there's maybe a part-time faculty open, you know, you move up into that. Your full-time faculties always pull from that pool. Seldom do they go outside, except if it's a director of a program or something, they'll do a national search.
Yes. Okay, we barely got enough time for one more question. You got another one for us?
Okay. Yeah, I got another one here. Here's Tammy in Salem. I seem to get dead-end jobs which have no future. The good jobs are out of my reach. What can I do? That's kind of open-ended.
Well, you know, again, let's try to make this as simple and succinct as we can.
Mm-hmm.
Tammy needs to identify what she means by good jobs. This
mm-hmm.
job working for that organization, this job working for that organization. She needs to go meet the person that's doing that good job and ask that person, I would love to do what you're doing. What do you recommend?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where she is getting the most accurate, the most up-to-date position. I mean, if she's saying the good jobs, that sounds a little too generic.
Right.
So this is almost sounds like a reverse advertisement for go back to college, where it says, if you want a good job, you need a college degree, and it's kind of like she's bought into that. We're running out of time, Peter. Do you take your slice on this?
Well, John, I think we've always talked about this. If a person likes you, they may hire you. If they don't like you, they're not going to hire you. If they don't know you, they have no way of evaluating you. I just have a daughter that told me she got a good job down where she's living. And she's a photographer, but she's working at a CPA firm. And I said, how did you get this? She goes, my network.
Yeah. Well, Peter, we're out of time. Thank you. Thank you for co-hosting this with me today.
You're more than welcome. It was great.
And so that concludes our Job Seeker broadcast for this week. Our host has been job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John is president and founder of the IDAC Group. He's been helping mid-career men and women find their sweet spot since 1973. John has authored 4 career advancement books. He led the development team for the premier IDAC Career Match instrument, which has assisted over 30,000 career seekers nationwide. John has personally trained over 600 counselors, college professors, and consultants in career advancement and job search. And he's personally selected 12 of these 600 whom he highlights on his website. These men and women are independent practitioners whom John has personally trained. They're not employees nor affiliated with the IDAC Group, and they've not been paid any fee to be featured. They are good, honest professionals who have gained John's approval over many years of successful practice. I'm Evan Newman, and I invite you to join us next week at this same time for our next cast. Say, do you know someone who is frustrated in their job search? Why not send them a tweet, email, or a Facebook note about our free broadcast? Maybe your friend can learn something which will land them that next job. We invite you to participate in our broadcast by sending your job search questions during our live broadcast. Those questions received during the live broadcast will receive John's priority attention. Thanks for listening, best wishes, and may God bless you in your job search.